Welcome to the USA Hockey Magazine podcast, the voice of hockey in America, with your host, Harry Thompson, editor of USA Hockey Magazine.
Hello and welcome to another USA Hockey Magazine podcast. Harry Thompson here at the National Hockey Coaches Symposium in Las Vegas, and I have the good fortune today to be joined by John Cooper, who is the head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning. John spoke this morning to kick off the festivities on day three. John, thanks for taking the time.
Oh, my pleasure.
I wanted to just get some of your thoughts about being here at the Level 5, speaking in front of 400 and something coaches, and then obviously getting to talk to some of them individually after your presentation.
Well, oh gosh, it brings back a flood of memories because it wasn't too long ago where I was the one sitting on the other side and not up on the podium. And you know, as many people probably know, I was practicing attorney not too long ago. And but USA Hockey, and I alluded to this in my speech, was USA Hockey has been very good to me, and I feel not only it's an honor, it's a duty to give back to USA Hockey because of how good the program's been for me and in my coaching development. And I've coached from high school to midgets, AAA, to all three tiers of junior, and I've given back. I've volunteered at many of the development camps and had a ton of fun in doing that, and was rewarded somehow, some way, that to be able to go overseas with a few of the teams and compete over there, and I got to learn so much during that process, and eventually I think it helped me get jobs in pro hockey and in my development where I am today. And so for me to be able to give back in situations like this and hopefully not bore the 450 people to death, but it was it's a lot of fun to do. And as I said, I think, you know, I'm not somebody that played in the National Hockey League, so I don't know, maybe I relate a little bit to some of the coaches that are out there because you know, of my background and stuff like that. But it's a lot of fun to come here and to listen to everybody's stories. As I said, I was in their situation not too long ago.
You know, you relate a story about how you thought that the your involvement with USA Hockey, and particularly some of the teams that you've coached overseas, may have helped you get your foot in the door in Tampa. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think any time you start getting in situations where you're kind of quote-unquote climbing the ladder in coaching, and we get into a situation. I was coaching the Green Bay Gamblers in the United States Hockey League, and never thought I'd leave there. I loved it there, and you get a phone call from Steve Yzerman and expressing interest in potentially, you know, would I be interested in interviewing for their American League hockey job. And so, you know, obviously I got that job, but years later when I asked him how did he come about with my name, and it's, you get your name out, and when I was volunteering for USA Hockey, it's coaching kids, it's coaching them at these summer camps, it's networking, it's meeting people, and as I was, the more I got involved, the more I went to, you know, on some of these international events, you start building a resume. And some of the things that I think helped me get in were a lot of the teams I coached won championships. But as Steve Yzerman told me later, that another big thing of the interest in bringing him in was that I had international experience with USA Hockey. And so that was a part of the reason that a door got opened for me. And, you know, the rest now is history. But if it wasn't for my time there and the time I spent, I may not be sitting here today.
You know, a lot of these guys here, in fact, all of them, are students of the game, and you know, they're here, they've paid their own way to get here and take time off of work. Well, you're the same way. I mean, you know, like you said, you've come up through this system. Can you just talk a little bit about how hard you've worked to really make it to the pinnacle of the coaching world?
Well, here's the thing. I shouldn't say that, but you say how hard you work. I think the one thing about working hard, it doesn't feel, I never like to say, oh, look how hard I'm working, because I love what I'm doing and I have such a passion for it. And so my wife and people say, God, you put so much time into this. Like, aren't you sick of this? And I look at them and I'm like, no, I love doing this. It's not work to me. It's a passion. And I think because that fuels my fire, I spend so much time in hockey and trying to get better, not only as a coach, but how I can help our players be better. And so there is a commitment level that has to, that overtakes. And I think that commitment level for me was, I was a practicing attorney, I guess it's now 10 years ago, but you have to give that up. Mm-hmm. And I was living I changed my whole lifestyle completely to go after my passion, and that was coaching. But when I set back and look at the whole process going through and the countless hours that were put in, I guess you look at it, it was extremely hard work. But I usually hate using that word hard because I love going through the process. And so it's a passion for me. I love it.
Any similarities between coaching and being an attorney? Any skill sets that maybe...
You know, I get asked that a lot. And probably a skill set, I always say, like, for instance, my presentation tonight. I think usually when you're at the team, you're talking to 20 players or you're talking to a training camp. Here you're speaking to 450 of your peers. And I think the one thing that really, being an attorney, was it helped with my public speaking, and it helped with a lot of my thinking on my feet. And I think maybe I had that in me a little bit, but it had to be brought out of me. I truly believe when I was a practicing attorney and doing defense work and doing trials, a lot of that is standing up in front of people. You're trying to convince a jury, which in essence, maybe you're trying to convince your team of your philosophy and how you want them to play, and public speaking and all those things, they just come in together. And I really think doing that and putting myself in those uncomfortable situations, I got better at it. And I think I'm better at it now when I address teams and I address people in these presentations.
Going back to your background, can you talk a little bit about some of the coaches that you've had that maybe had a big impact on you, not only as a coach, but also just as a person?
Well, that's hard because there's so many. I've been asked that as well, and I hate pointing out, because then all of a sudden you forget somebody and you feel bad about that. But there's lots of people that have helped me out along the way, and a lot of them are probably sitting in the room across the hall. But I'll just think of late here, guys that really helped me out, especially when I was in pro hockey, where Mike Babcock of Detroit Red Wings he probably doesn't realize how much he's helped me, but he was a guy I didn't know that well, but really respected how he ran things, and I used to call him when I was in the American League quite a bit. Joel Quenneville, the Chicago Blackhawks, another guy that I just like the way he operates and how his teams played and how guys played for him. And so I would say, those were two guys that when I was jumping into pro, I needed help because I didn't know the pro game. I didn't know how things worked. I was, people say, oh, you're a rookie coach. Well, I'm not really a rookie coach. I've been coaching for 15 years, but I was a rookie to the NHL. And yeah, those are two guys that really, they really helped me out.
You mentioned this in your presentation a little bit. You were talking about small area games that, mm-hmm. that you play at the NHL level, and I'm sure that Kevin McLaughlin and the people at the youth hockey department would want me to at least talk to you a little bit about your philosophy about using small area games at the NHL level. And also a bigger question, how much time do you work on skill development, even at the highest level of the game?
Well, it gets a little... I don't think there's a situation where you stop getting better. I think you can get better at everything all the time. And maybe if it's... you take huge leaps of getting better at those ages. What is it? From maybe 10 to 20 years old. But you're still getting better. The NHL players, they want to get better. And so... but practice time's limited in the NHL. So that's why training camps are so important, and instilling habits and skill drills and all those things early on so that you can go through them quickly during a year, because practice time is at such a premium. And I think sometimes these drills get boring. And when I think that separates the good from the great, it's the guys that'll do the boring stuff and get better at it. For instance, just throw an angling drill out there. That's been talked about quite a bit this morning. It's boring to practice angling. Well, how do you turn that and make it fun? Well, you turn it into a small game. And you have the players not really knowing or thinking about their practicing angling, but they are practicing angling. And you as a coach, I feel it's our duty to make sure we make a drill that A, they want to do, B, they're having fun doing, and C, it's getting the point across. And so we will do competitive games because especially it happens at every level, but the compete level of the National Hockey League, that's a big reason guys make it that far is because they compete so darn hard. But you put them any sort of competition drill, these guys really get after it. And so that's where I believe the small games come into play. They're hidden skill drills for these guys, and they work really well.
You know, that was one thing that stuck out in your presentation today. You were talking about how you want to make practice fun, even at the NHL level. You know, people think, well, these guys are pros, and they're making all this money. It's a job, but you still want to keep it fun.
Yeah, I don't want to sit here and say, well, fun is we bring a clown out with a big nose and squeeze it and laugh. Like, but we have fun competing. And we'll pit little competitions against each other. Guys love competing against each other. They love bragging rights. All that goes on. It's just the little parts of your team. And also, I think it really truly helps guys go to war for each other. I don't believe you should have, whatever level it is, your teams leave a practice sitting there saying, that wasn't fun for me. I'm not having fun. Because it starts, what if Steven Stamkos sat there when he was 8 years old and said, I'm not having fun doing this, and went and played soccer?
Right.
We don't want to see that. And, I just say him because he plays for the Tampa Bay Lightning. But we don't want whatever country a player is playing, we want them having fun while they're playing. But not to get better while they're doing it. And so... I want to confuse fun with competing, but we make it interesting for the guys. So they want to do it longer. Mm-hmm. So if you're doing, we talked about angling, and we do an angling drill that's just stagnant, static, and boring, they'll do it for 1 or 2 minutes, and then they kind of lose interest. You put it into a fun game, you can do it for 20 minutes, and they're still gaining. And so, as I said earlier, that's our job, but... We like to have a little, and then it stretches out. Maybe we'll have shootouts, or maybe we'll have a little relay race during a practice. That's a 2-0 game. We do this at the NHL level. Maybe I'm different than others, I don't know, but I haven't had one of our players yet say, hey, we don't want to do this. It's rather been the other side where the guys are really enjoying doing it.
And obviously we're about a couple weeks away from the start of training camp, so
yeah.
Can you just talk a little bit about... your team, and I mean, obviously last year you made it to the playoffs, and so building on that success for this year?
Yeah, we had it was a massive turnaround year for us. We were 28th in the league the year before I came in, and I'd spent 15 games with the team, so I really got my feet wet. But it's a transition year for us. We got to really find out about ourselves. I got to find out about our team. Team found out about me. I believe we had... 9 or 10 rookies that had under 30 games under their belt in the NHL play for us. The next closest team, I think, had 4. So we really took big steps and eventually came second in our division and made the playoffs. The one thing is we had such an early exit in the playoffs that sting has really resonated with our players, and it has still stayed with me. So much to the point that I've had to make light of it in my presentation, but it hurts. And I think there's a hunger coming back with our players. We made, for a 101-point team, we made a lot of changes. We brought in some new players. We brought in some players that have won before, and we're really excited about that. But I think as a job, as a coach, is all of a sudden now, 12 months ago, we were looked at as somebody that wasn't going to make the playoffs. Nobody believed in us. Well, 12 months later, all of a sudden, you know, there's people out there that have picked us to do some big things in the league, and with that comes pressure. And so we got to make sure that we aren't reading our press clippings, and we come to work every day, because the balance between making the playoffs and not making the playoffs is razor thin. And if we think we're just going to roll right into playoffs this year, we'll be the first team that's going to be not make the playoffs. And so I think that's a big job as our team, is to keep our focus and understand we are still a young team, but we have a lot there, and we're really excited with our additions. And and pretty excited about where we're at.
You know, last year Tampa made some big news at the trade deadline, trading away one of the, arguably the best players in the NHL and Marty St. Louis. But you got, you know, to get quality, you have to give quality, and you got Ryan Callahan in return. Can you talk just a little bit about Ryan Callahan, what he brings to the team, and what kind of a leader he is?
Yeah, Ryan was, I think that was an incredibly tough situation for Ryan. He was a captain of the New York Rangers, been there. It was the only organization he really knew. And on the other side, we had Marty St. Louis, who's an icon in the city. Great human being, was a great captain for us. And at the time, I think he wanted a change for whatever reasons that have been well documented. But Marty was he was our best player when he left. We had Steven Stamkos, our star, was hurt. And Marty really, really carried our team. And so to lose him really hurt. But the one thing I think that was unfair for Ryan is all of a sudden people are expecting him to fill Marty St. Louis' shoes. And Ryan came in. He had a smile on his face. He came to work, and he gave us an element that we just didn't have on our team because he's such a competitor. He's so gritty. He's been a captain of the New York Rangers, so his leadership was great when he came into the room. He didn't try to take over. He just fit in with the guys. And but as I said, it just he's looked at as the guy that had to fill Marty's shoes, and they're completely different players, but he filled them in a different way. For him to believe in us to re-sign a long-term deal for us was very gratifying. And I think what goes kind of unnoticed a little bit is all the players that did come down. I think Ryan Callahan's signing triggered a lot of people coming down to play for us. So we're really excited, when we did get him, and proud of the way how he handled, you know, kind of a tough situation when he came in.
And obviously, big things coming in Tampa. You know, only going to help the youth hockey community, help hockey grow in South Florida. So it must be pretty gratifying for that.
It is, and I think that's one of the things why you're probably looking at. You know, Dave Ogren was talking today about the amount of U.S. hockey players being drafted. The number keeps going up. Well, if I think hockey didn't reach out to some, what do they call it, the Sunshine States, the Californias, the Arizonas, the Floridas, the Texas. And I truly believe a big part of that is because the NHL migrated there. Now you're getting generations of fans, kids are starting to play the game. And in many of these situations, many of the players in the league have stayed in their hometowns and are starting to help out in the coaching. And with that, the development of the ADM and so many things going on, you're seeing players be drafted out of the quote-unquote these untraditional markets. And so I just think it's great for the sport. And but it's a lot of fun to watch, which you look at Florida 20 years ago, probably didn't have a hockey player, and now there's hockey going up all over the place. It's a lot of fun to be a part of that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, John, I want to thank you very much for taking the time, not only for being here at the National Hockey Coaches Symposium, but for talking to us today.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure, having a blast. And now we're going to try and beat the heat in Las Vegas here and sneak in a round of golf.
All right. Well, thanks again, and thanks, everybody, for listening.
You've been listening to another USA Hockey Magazine podcast, produced by Norman Hayward and Mark Burns. Be sure to follow us at usahockeymagazine.com, as well as on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks for listening.